Welcome back, everyone. We are talking with Maurice Cotterell about future science and, of course, the application of some of this knowledge potentially in a weapon that was, part of the World Trade Center disintegration, as it were. And there's some interesting ideas there. I have so many more questions, of course, of where we want to talk about this. And I was going to continue, Maurice, in terms of talking about the weapon or asking about the weapon a little bit more. They have to develop something where you could control, let's say, radius or aperture or something like this, that it radiates maybe from the center of where the actual, generator or weapon that was placed from the center and outward. Correct? They have to be some kind of variables that they can do here. Otherwise, there would be more things destroyed in New York at that time. Correct?
Absolutely correct. And I don't know how they would have done that. You see, gravity waves spread out like ripples in a pond. We know this because gravity varies as to the square of the distance, or inversely as the square with the distance. So that means that the further away the wave gets, the more it spreads out. So after 1 meter away from the antenna, it would be, for example, a 1 meter circle in the pond. Then at 2 meters away from the antenna, it would be 4 meters diameter circle in the pond. Then at 4 meters from the antenna, it will be 16 meters diameter circle in the pond. So the ripples go out just like they would in a pond. Now, how they would direct them into a beam, or if they would need to direct them into a beam, we're assuming that they need to. It's not something I'd have to experiment with it. The question is, can we shield gravity? And I don't know the answer to that yet. If they can shield gravity, they can clearly make a deflector like a parabolic dish out of anti-gravity material.
Well, exactly. I was going to say, could you shield it with anti-gravity as a counteractive?
I'm not sure. I mean, some other people have asked me this in emails, mm-hmm. and I've thought about it. And one would think that you could. I would never like to say no. I can't see a way of shielding it, but because of the way it works, it's just so clever the way it works. I mean, I was able to put all this stuff together in the first place when I asked myself the question, if I was designing the universe, what would I do to stop all the bits moving around? Now, this is a departure, Henrik, from how science works. And this is because how human beings work, most human beings are primitive and incapable of structured thought. All of the so-called discoveries made by mankind so far have either been accidental or by reverse engineering. For example, when aviators wanted to learn how to fly, they examined the shape of a wing of a bird and noticed that it was flat underneath and curved on top. So they shaped the wings of the aircraft in the same way and realized that the shape allowed the air underneath to go slower, above the wing to go slower than the air underneath, which went faster. This gave the bird lift. And, of course, in the case of the aircraft, it gave the aircraft lift. But they were incapable of approaching this problem in the first place by asking the question, what do we need to create lift? Now, human beings are not very skilled at working forwards. They always want to work backwards. And that's because we go into the future backwards. If you imagine walking into the future, we are all facing backwards. And everything we do is relative to everything we've ever done before. We can't think forwards in a way what I call reason-inspired inquiry. The same goes for nuclear discoveries. Scientists never asked, what would I need to make the universe work? What they did instead was start smashing atoms together as though they were grandfather clocks in the hope that they could reassemble the pieces and figure out what was going on inside. And this happens in every branch of science today. You know, even medicine, doctors can cure virtually none of the 20,000 diseases listed in the World Health Organization list of diseases. The ones they can cure are cured by antibiotics, which were discovered accidentally, not through the reasoned, logical approach of doctors, and a few diseases are cured by natural vitamins and minerals.
And you know what? That also speaks volumes about the fact that it's important to stay creative and do things and actually do make mistakes, at least to the point where we could reason from the bottom up, so to speak, because we are, as you said, we're creatures of, we're standing on our history, if you will, and that's what we have to build on and work for. So what we don't know, how do we learn that knowledge? It's a difficult question.
It's actually not a difficult question, Henrik. Once you change the way your mind works and change the way you think, instead of looking down, I put myself in God's shoes. If I were God and I were designing the universe, for example, or if I was designing hell and planet prison is hell, don't forget, and it must have been designed by God because God designed the universe. If I was designing the planets and the stars, hell, what would I do? You know, to make it hell. And, well, I think reincarnation would be a good idea because that would ensure that bad people came back as good people and good people came back as bad people. And you know, the skeptics argue that reincarnation is nonsense. But the only thing about, the only thing extraordinary about reincarnation is it's stranger to be born once than it is to be born twice. I mean, at least if you've been born once, you know it's possible. And if I was designing hell, I would introduce a mechanism, for example, like time. Because time doesn't exist in the spirit world, but it does exist in the physical world. And time began with the Big Bang, when the universe began. Now, it's interesting because time is wonderful. It would really make hell a wonderful place to be. Because if you notice, time slows down when we are sad and unhappy, which means we're sad and unhappy for longer. And time speeds up when we're happy, which means that we're happy for less time.
That's so certainly how it feels.
Time makes sure that we're all miserable. and another mechanism I would use would be to make sure that every human being thought differently. For example, that we had 12 types of different personality determined by astrology. That way, everybody would argue for it most of the time. And people would like things or dislike things, which is most illogical. There's no need to like or dislike what God has chosen to create. And the problem is, with normal people who like and dislike, is that the dislike turns to hate. And then everybody hates each other and starts killing each other. And so you'd have war. So what a great idea. Wouldn't that be a great mechanism to have in hell? So we'd have astrology and 12 signs of the zodiac. Throw in a few natural disasters, earthquakes, hurricanes, tornadoes, droughts, floods, volcanic eruptions, which would reduce everything we work towards to rubble periodically. And wouldn't it be great if we could get mankind to destroy itself every now and again so that some of the souls go back to heaven and go back to God, which makes God get bigger because God is good and God is love. So if more electromagnetic energy, the souls of the dead people go to God, God would get bigger and God would be a better God and a bigger God.
A bitter God.
Because what happens is if we make mankind the head of the food chain, then we know the head of the food chain will always have too many babies because there's nobody to keep them in check or in control, providing we make sex pleasurable. So let's make sex pleasurable, make mankind the head of the food chain, and what that will mean is that we will reproduce uncontrollably and destroy ourselves. So mankind will become the oil supplies of the future. So if we go back millions of years, what we find is that mankind comes and grows, civilizations appear and disappear, and none of it matters because all the souls, that the good souls go to God and the bad souls come back to hell for another test of being in hell. And it reminds me of that, I once heard a very wise old saying that two prisoners looked out from bars. One saw mud, the other saw stars. And when you're in hell, I always found that quite reassuring, that we can either look at the dross of the earth or we can gaze skywards and realize that although we can't go faster than the speed of light when we're in the human body, as soon as the soul leaves the body, then the electromagnetic energy of the soul can travel at the speed of light to other stars and other planets. And that's what makes all of this mechanism so wonderful and so beautiful. So getting back to the question, can we ever... Can anti-gravity be used to direct the gravity beam? I don't know, but if we're going to think about the problem, we have to say, if I were in God's shoes and I wanted mankind to destroy itself, what would I do? And I suppose if I was God, I would allow mankind to discover how electricity works, to discover how magnetism works, to discover how gravity works, and then to destroy itself with phaser weapons. So there's two games going on here. One is the spiritual game, where we are all spiritual beings by nature. We are electromagnetic energy, but that energy is attached to a lump of meat, which is made of carbon. It's carbon-based, or 666. It's made of a 6 electrons, 6 protons, 6 neutrons. So there's two things. We're in a game. This is illusion. Everything we see around us, as the Mayas told us, is illusion. The word Maya is an ancient Sanskrit word. It means illusion.
Indeed.
And the holy books, like the Bhagavad Gita of the Indians, they tell us that whenever irreligion takes over the world, then God reincarnates himself into a body. And this body could be Lord Krishna or Lord Buddha or Tutankhamun or Viracocha of Peru or Viracocha Pachacamac or Lord Paykal of the Mayas or Quetzalcoatl of the Mayas. God has been to Earth many times, and he sends a salesman down to give us the rules that if we love each other, then our electromagnetic energy, the inside us, the voltage, the soul voltage, will go higher, and we'll be light beings. Light will shine from our heads. We'll get halos. And if we hate each other, then our voltages will fall, and they will not be able to escape the magnetic field of the Earth or the gravitational field of the Earth, and they'll simply reattach to a new bundle of developing cells. Now, those cells could be the cells of a dog or a worm. Could be a human being if you've been fairly good, but we can come back as a flower or an oak tree, depending how frustrated we need to get. You know, life is life. Everything is God. Everything is every living thing is a manifestation of God, living thing, and every inanimate thing is a manifestation of God through Einstein's equation E equals MC squared, where the energy has become mass or matter. So it's easy once we start to look around us and stop imagining that we're clever. You know, scientists imagine they're clever when they don't understand anything. They don't understand why the middle of the Earth is hot. They can't put hydrogen and oxygen together to make large quantities of water. They haven't got a clue why the sea is salty. They don't know what causes tornadoes. It's a mess. It's fraudulent. They're a bunch of fraudsters, scientists. They haven't got a clue, yet they pretend to be clever. And this is the saddest thing of all.
They assure us they have all, if not most, of the answers anyway. But yeah, I wanted to also return a little bit more to this as well, when it comes to the effects of the weapon, because some of it seems to be random, and maybe this is accidental or not, because we have the scenario where some of the cars further away from the central location of the towers, etc., was affected in different ways. So the question is, you know, how does that work, do you think? Do you think because that's would be kind of a giveaway, if you know what I mean, and maybe that was an accidental effect of using the weapon. What do you think?
And this is what we can learn from observation. Clearly, some of the beams scattered. So in answer to your earlier question, it could be that some materials can act in an anti-gravitational way, or a mirror, a gravitational mirror, to reflect gravity waves.
Yep.
Because it seems that some of the energy bounced around and went off course to hit these cars, which were some distance from the towers. So again, it's not all the cats who don't get stuck up trees that we need to examine to find out how the cats' minds work. If we wish to find out how a cat's mind works, we need to study only the cats that get caught up trees. And if we wish to learn how a gravity beam is deflected, we need to look at the beams that went wrong, the ones that went in the wrong direction, not the ones that went in the right direction.
Yeah, indeed. What about Building 7? How did they take that one down? Same method? Did that dust?
No. That, I mean, that was quite different. Definitive. It was brought down by regular explosives. Whether this was thermite or whatever, I don't know. There was certainly no beam in that, because that certainly hit the floor. And it seems that it was also convenient, because George Bush was undergoing an investigation for the loss of $2 trillion that had disappeared in the Iraq war. And so he'd set up an investigation as to where the money may have gone to. And the people carrying out the investigation were the CIA, located in Building 7. So when Building 7 was destroyed, it was very convenient, because George Bush could turn around and say, well, you know, we were doing an investigation, but all the evidence has disappeared, so I can't answer your question as to where the missing $2 trillion went. So Building 7, I believe, was destroyed for that reason, but it's a smoking gun which shows that the CIA could have planted the demolition detonators and explosives in that building, and therefore they could have placed them over a long period of time in the Twin Towers.
Indeed. Now, this is a very negative, of course, deconstructive way of using a device, if I can call it that, like this. But what are some of the positive applications of something like this, a discovery like this, or how it could be used? Could it lead to, you know, so-called free energy, etc.? Tell us more about that, Maurice.
Absolutely. The positive side of the coin is that gravity and anti-gravity can be used for free energy to produce power, energy, electricity, from heat. Basically, all of the types of energy generation we have today come from boiling water and using the heat to produce electricity through generators. So we know that through periodic scaling, the elements of the periodic table will produce heat if lined up in an ascending order, in rising order of more complex atoms, beginning with hydrogen and ending with the final atom, which has to contain 120 electrons, protons, and neutrons, although that particular one hasn't been discovered yet. But theoretically, we can predict it's there, because there are, if you look at the construction of the atom, there is provision for 120 electrons, protons, and neutrons. So, yes, we can have free energy, and there's no reason why we can't start the free energy today. None whatsoever. It would cost peanuts. Yes, it means that we can start manufacturing all of the elements of the periodic table. All we have to do is get the magnetic orientations correct between the atoms. So I can see that as a possibility in the future. There are lots of advantages to helically polarized electromagnetic energy, or gravity waves, as I call them. Mm-hmm. We could use them for levitation, of course, for moving things around. We can use the disintegration of matter for a transporter mechanism, like they used in Star Trek for beam me up and beam me down, Scotty. Now, what we have to do there is disintegrate the matter. We have to take a location of every atom in the thing you've disintegrated. Then we have to reintegrate the matter and put every atom back in the same location relative to each other to finish up where we started. Now, that I can see that happening with inanimate objects like suitcases and clothes and things like that.
Right.
I don't believe it will ever happen with living things.
No.
Because as soon as you disintegrate the matter, the soul is released.
Yeah.
So you'll finish up with a body. Now, a body without a soul is inanimate. It's no longer animated by the voltage inside it. And I look at this like a children's toy, whereby, if you can imagine a small children's toy the size of your hand, let's say we've got a chimpanzee playing a drum. Then if we put the battery inside the chimpanzee starts drumming. When we take the battery out, the chimpanzee stops drumming. Now, when it starts drumming with the battery inside, we say the monkey is alive. That's the word we use. And when we take the battery out and the monkey stops drumming, it doesn't matter how much you hit the monkey or kick the monkey or twist the monkey, it will not come to life because it doesn't have a battery. Now, this is like a human being. When it's a fetus in the womb, the human being attracts a soul, the battery, inside the body. And the battery is electrical. It animates us. We have a computer in the brain which is fed by the computer, fed by the voltage from the electromagnetic energy. So when we're born, our arms and legs move around. They are animated by the soul voltage. But when the body becomes sick 70 years later, the soul voltage is no longer held on to the body. The body releases the soul because the voltage of the body disappears. We have two voltages to begin with in the womb. The voltage of the body might be plus 5 volts. The voltage of the soul might be minus 5 volts. So when the minus 5 attaches to the plus 5, we finish up as a human being with 0 volts. Now, as we go through life, when the body becomes sick, it decreases from minus 5 volts, maybe down to zero. And that's when we say we've died. And the voltage inside the battery then is released. The soul is released. And if it's been good, or if the voltage has grown during its lifetime, it goes to heaven. If the voltage has gone down, then it will reincarnate. It will simply attach to another collection of cells which are beginning to develop. So although we might look at a flower at one moment in time and hold the flower between our fingers, it looks like a flower, it feels like a flower, it smells like a flower, it tastes like a flower. But a few weeks later, the cells will begin to rot. The soul of the flower will be released, and the soul will reincarnate and become a worm or a flea or an ant. So the flower is not actually a flower. It appears to be a flower for one moment in time. It's actually God in disguise. Every living thing is God in disguise. Human beings are God in disguise. We are half God, which is the soul inside, and half devil, which is the body comprised of the carbon atom, 666. And once we're in, all this is explained, by the way, in future science. So we're going a long journey of simple science for the 12-year-old. Any 12-year-old can understand this book. So if you want to know what God is and what heaven is and what hell is and why we live, why we die, why things fall to the floor, what electricity is, it's all in this book, and it's very, very simple for anybody to understand. And I think having read it, Henrik, I think you'll agree.
Well, it's a lot of interesting ideas in there, for sure. There's a lot of interesting, of course, applications that could be done of this, and this is what we're talking about right now. Well, you said you're not kind of a, you know, applications kind of guy. You're more theoretical. But what would it take for someone with this knowledge to start experimenting and or in the extension actually building something that could generate these gravity waves that we've been talking about?
It wouldn't take anything at all. It's simple. As I say, all you need to do is line up the atoms in ascending order. So if you've got access to hydrogen, access to helium, access to lithium, and access to beryllium, access to all of the elements, all you have to do is get a tin can, not tin, I'll take that back, it's a bit more complicated than that. All you have to do is get a container and fill them with one each of the elements, line them up in order, and put hydrogen at the top in a silo fashion, so the heaviest atoms are at the bottom. Then that pyramid-shaped arrangement will radiate gravity waves towards the Earth. And you can use the heat coming off the pyramid to generate electricity. So it doesn't take anything. You know, a 10-year-old boy can do it if he's got the elements, if he's got the containers, which I haven't got.
Yeah, but have someone contacted you about working on this for experimentation purposes?
A few people have actually. They've said that they've bought a kit with 20 of the elements and they're doing experiments. I mean, there's no doubt that it will work. There is no doubt. If it didn't work, if what I'm saying doesn't work, then we'd all float off the Earth because there wouldn't be any gravity. There's no question that gravity works in this way. It's got to. Because it answers all of the questions of physics that nobody can answer. It doesn't just answer what gravity is. Once we understand that the atom is half magnetic and half electric, we can then understand what I call the 12 great mysteries of physics. Why the protons in the middle of atoms don't spring apart. Why the orbiting electrons don't get sucked into the middle. Why the shells are offset by 90 degrees or 45 degrees as they are. How gravity works, how permanent magnetism works, how electricity works, why a magnetic field appears when a current flows, why galaxies are spiral shaped, why stars cluster in bunches. We can understand what drives the sunspot cycle, what causes global warming and global cooling. Now, that can't all be coincidence.
No.
It can't be. And we get all of that simply by looking at the atom in a different way. Now, scientists are never going to accept this work while they're alive. While this bunch of morons are with us, they're not going to accept this work because they're the morons who came up with the old routine that doesn't work. They don't want any answers to this stuff. They get billions of dollars every year to look for answers. So why should they find the answers? It's like asking turkeys to vote for Christmas. They're not going to do it. So These scientists will never accept what we've been talking about tonight. But their kids, who will be coming along in 20 years' time...
Except, Maurice, those who are working in the black ops departments that are, I believe, experimenting with basically anything that they can in order to advance forward in all the areas that they're interested in.
Of course they are, yeah. Because they've had the $2 trillion.
Yeah. Yeah. And but you're saying, though, that you don't believe that anyone actually really knows the stuff? They're just...
Well, why would they have given me the time that they've given me over the past 2 years if they don't want to get the information? Why are they trying to get access to my stuff if they're 20 years ahead of me? It doesn't make sense. Everything I know is in the book. The things that I discover, I send out in a mail shot every few weeks to people all over the world, including... the nuclear energy facility in Switzerland, CERN, including the Institute of Physics, the Institute of Engineering and Technology, the Royal Society. Every few weeks, I send them more and more discoveries.
Do you think they seriously are looking at it, or do they throw it in the trash bin?
No, of course they're not looking at it. Yeah. They're just getting more and more annoyed and probably trying to find out different ways of shutting me up. They're not interested in this stuff. They don't want to know how things work. These are the guys that are getting the trillions of dollars for not doing anything.
Build a weapon, they say, and here's money. Yeah, it's pretty hilarious, isn't it? What do you think that they have at their disposal in some other areas that might be related to some of this stuff? I mean, there's been speculations, but as you said, if they had an application of this back in, 91, 93, wherever that was in Iraq, and then maybe this has progressed forward, they've updated it, they've refined the technology, maybe they have newer generations or versions of this at this stage. Since 9/11, do you think that they've continued to update this? Do you think that they might use it again?
Well, they could do. The thing is about this, once we understand how gravity works, it changes every single thing that we think we understand about science. For example, Isaac Newton believed that the gravity of the moon pulled on the water. But now we understand that water gives off gravity waves. So the water is actually pulling itself towards the moon. It's the other way around. Now, if you've been riding a bicycle backwards for 200 years, and somebody comes along and shows you that if you turn it round, you can get a lot more mileage out of it, you can make a lot more progress. And what we find is, for example, we don't understand how tornadoes are made, or orthodox science doesn't, or how low-pressure systems are developed. They think they do. But they don't. They don't understand how lightning forms in clouds. They have no idea where the massive voltages are generated in clouds. And they're generated from the gravity waves that excite the dust particles in the dirty black clouds of storm clouds. That's where the energy comes from the rubbing together of silicon and silica, I should say, and iron particles, which are rubbed together by the helically polarized gravity waves coming off the water molecules inside every cloud. Now, once you start to understand what causes lightning, what generates the charge separation in clouds, how tornadoes are created, then you can start creating or making tornadoes using satellites firing down anti-gravity on critically balanced cloud formations. In other words, you can tip them over into the tornado mode when normally 20 or 30% of those would never have become tornadoes because they don't get the same critical mass. But you can, like a spinning top, you can start spinning them on their way with gravity radiation until they reach a critical mass, and then they become the tornadoes that they would never have become without the outside interference. So in every single branch of science we learn, once we understand how gravity works, we can understand different ways of doing the same things as we used to do, but in a far more optimal way. As I say, instead of riding the bicycle backwards, mankind is now in a stage of getting up off its knees, stopping crawling and walking and making discoveries in a logical fashion, which is never done before. Mankind is very, very primitive.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's Yeah, it feels like something we need to develop forward in some area to be able to obviously solve many of the problems that we've created for ourselves, of course. That's the trick of this. Are you positive overall, Maurice, that we'll get out of this rut that we're in right now?
Well, what I mean by positive? I mean, this is hell. Are you saying, is hell working as it should? Of course hell is working as it should.
Right.
And the idea is to get out of hell. And the only way we can do that is to love our neighbor, to increase our soul voltage, and escape from our body, and go to heaven and be a piece of God again, to recombine with God, because we started off as God, and we'll go back to God if our soul voltage grows. But
So why do you think this experience that we're in right now were created? What's the reason for that?
It's so God can grow, because, you know, it tells us in the Bible God created man in his own image. And we know the Bible tells us that God is good and God is love. So the only thing better than God is more God. So if God made man in his own image, and we recognize that man cannot grow spontaneously, the only way a man can grow is to give some genes away, some DNA, to sacrifice some sperm. The only way a woman can grow is to sacrifice an ovum, which contains the genes. The only way an apple tree can grow is to throw an apple away, and another apple tree grows. So if God wants to grow, he's got to throw a piece of himself away. And this is what happened in the beginning when he was energy. He was pure light. You know, in the beginning, there was light. And God said, in the beginning there was darkness, and God said, let there be light, and then the energy appeared, the electromagnetic energy appeared in the universe. And then if you look at Einstein's equation, E equals mc squared, we see that some of the energy was sacrificed by God. In other words, let's say God was 1,000,000 volts of light in the beginning, and he was positive. So let's say God was positive 1,000,000 volts. He then sacrificed, say, 100,000 volts. Those 100,000 volts went to the other side of Einstein's equation, where E equals mc squared. But of course, as soon as they cross the equation, they become minus 100,000 volts. Then the minus 100,000 volts turned into matter with an explosion. We had the Big Bang. But what we see is everything on the left-hand side of Einstein's equation is positive, and everything on the right-hand side is negative. So if God is on the left-hand side, he's light and he lives in heaven, everything on the right-hand side of the equation must be the devil and hell, which means that everything that which is created that we see is hell. We must be living in hell. And now what happens is God created hell so that human beings who loved each other, their voltage would grow, and so then the voltage would go back to God, and God would get bigger. So God gets bigger, so there's more love and more good. But he can only have that using this mechanism of hell and human beings. And we've looked at the mechanisms earlier on. All he had to do was make sure we had reincarnation, time, astrology, natural disasters, make sure that we enjoyed sex and destroyed ourselves every few million years. And it's all working. It's wonderful.
It's like a big machine, huh?
Like a big machine. It's poetry in motion.
Yeah. When did you start to get some of these ideas that came to you? I believe was it 89, you're working at Cranfield University, working on basically calculating the duration of long-term magnetic reversals on the sun, right? Is that how it began, all of this, for you?
It was. And when I was at Cranfield, I calculated the duration of sunspot cycles. And I came up with two fundamental cycles, one of 11.49 years, one of 187 years, that they mix together to form an 18,139-year cycle, which changes direction, north to south, positive to negative, five times during those 18,000 years. So one of those magnetic reversals came to 3,740 years. Now, if you work that out, that's 1,366,040 days. And that number was worshipped by the ancient Mayas of Mexico 1,250 years ago. So they knew what I discovered in 1989 on the computer at Cranfield, which was one of the biggest in the world at the time. They worshipped that same number 1,250 years ago. So how did they do it? And once I started to investigate the Maya, I realized that Lord Peikal, the leader of the Maya, around 750 AD, was a reincarnation of Jesus. And then when I started to look at all of the other spiritual leaders, I realized that they were all incarnations of God at different moments in time in human history. And what that meant was that periodically, just as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, when irreligion takes over the earth, I reincarnate myself. And God comes down to earth like the great reaper, and he turns the world upside down, if you like, tells us how it really works and what's going on. He's like a salesman. And then he goes away again, and he leaves us behind with all this super knowledge.
And then we're all fighting now, about that, of course, for a couple of thousand years, right?
Of course, we're all fighting, because that's the nature of the soul. It's fascinating. You see, God is a soul. He's the original million-volt soul. But we are also souls, but we might only be 5-volt souls. Now, the interesting thing is that there's a mechanism. And we know this if you start to study reincarnation. There's a mechanism in the soul world such that if a soul leaves the body that's been very bad, it need not necessarily come back as a dog or a tree. It could shatter into thousands of pieces. And those tiny millivolt souls or microvolt souls all attach to a microvolt body. In other words, a 2-volt soul might come back as 2,000 1 microvolt souls. And those 2,000 individual microvolt souls might attach to 2,000 1 microvolt ant bodies. So the soul comes back as a colony of ants of 2,000 individual millionth of a volt souls.
I'll go ahead, finish that thought before I cut you off. Go ahead.
That's okay. Well, what happens is, if you notice with a colony of ants, they will always protect the colony. And the same goes for bees. They will always protect the colony. So if you attack an ant, it will sacrifice itself and allow itself to be killed rather than allow the colony to die. Because the colony is a soul. Each individual ant does not have a soul. It's 1 millionth of a soul. The same thing happens with bees. The same thing happens with birds. That's why they all fly in flocks. The same thing happens with fish. So they all swim around in shoals. The same thing happens with cows. That's why they all point the same way in a field when they're eating grass. And if we start to look at the world around us, we can see these soul mechanisms. You know, if you look at my work on the Maya, I didn't knock this stuff up over the weekend. I mean, all this knowledge from the previous incarnations of God, who all left behind their secrets encoded in the pyramids and encoded in their carvings and jewelry and pictures, paintings. They left it all behind, but they had to encode it so that people who are not meant to get to heaven don't discover it by mistake and get to heaven by mistake. They wanted to make sure only the really good people can figure out this knowledge, increase their soul voltage, and escape from hell. So the rewards are there for those who are spiritually predisposed. But those who are not spiritually predisposed, not only will they not understand how God works, but they will never understand how gravity works or anything else, because their minds are dead. They're deadheads. They live in the darkness. And I can give somebody a book, but I can't make them open it. I can get a horse to water, but I can't make him drink. And no matter how much you push, cajole, or persuade somebody to order a book with divine work, it will never be opened because they are not divine souls.
Well, let me ask you this. If souls have higher or lesser voltage, and today, as it is now, we have an increased population as well. And I don't know if it works like this, that there is a set voltage that it's there. I know you're talking about the increase of voltage for a god, I believe you talked about, but we have more people right now on the planet than ever. Does this mean that it's a quantity as opposed to a quality question? The voltage is lesser, but it's divided among more people, if this has to do with the quality of the soul, if you know what I'm getting at, Maurice?
That's exactly right. If we go back to the Golden Age, which some Krishna schools of thought believe in, then every soul radiated light, and we were all about 10,000 volts each. That was 5,000 years ago. But then, over time, about 1,250 years later, people start to have sex. They have children, and they You know, they start to move around, they leave their families because it's not enough food in that location because there's too many of them. So they start to scatter, they go to different continents. And 1,250 years later, we enter the Silver Age, whereby people are happy, but not as happy as they were during the Golden Age. And then these people, they start to mutate through ionizing radiations from the sun. The sun gives off corona discharges, X-rays that mutate people. And they change from being black or brown or yellow or white into different variants. And so we get the peoples we see today on different continents. So we all see each other differently. We don't see each other as brothers and sisters anymore. So then we get to the Bronze Age, which lasts for about 1,250 years. Now you've got not just the original 1,000 people from the Golden Age, not just the original 10,000 people from the Silver Age, but now you've got 5 million people on the Earth. And instead of being 10,000 volts each, they're only 100 volts each. But still, they're not too unhappy. But they start farming. They start building fences around the cattle. People start stealing off each other because it's easier to steal than to build fences. And so people start having enemies. And again, this lasts for another 1,250 years. And we find ourselves in the Iron Age of mankind, which is another 1,250 years. And now we're all at wars, we're all killing each other. The soul voltage now has fallen to only about 5 volts per person. The quality's gone down, so there's a lot more people. The same human energy is still on the planet, it's just that the voltage has gone down. And we can see this, the people who nailed Jesus to the cross 2,000 years ago were probably, for example, 100 volts each. And maybe there was 1,000 of them who all voted to nail Jesus to a cross in Jerusalem at that time. And they released Barabbas, the common criminal, when they were asked to decide between Jesus and Barabbas by the Romans, because this is one of the human conditions. You see, good people make normal people feel lousy, because good people are good and they're pious and they tell people what not to do and how not to live their lives. So it makes normal people feel lousy. But normal people love bad people because bad people are bad. So they make normal people feel good. So when given a choice either to nail the good guy to the cross or release the bad guy, normal human beings will always release the bad guy. So these people in Jerusalem, let's say there was 1,000 of them, they didn't go to heaven after they stitched up Jesus, clearly. So what happened is they had kids and they had kids, and now there's thousands or perhaps millions of them on earth, all with 1-volt souls. And this is what the Antichrist is. The Antichrist is all around us. They were the guys who nailed Jesus to the cross 2,000 years ago, and they're walking among us today trying to destroy the works of God, trying to destroy divine works. That's the way they are.
So it's in your view the same people, but they're divided. Well, the same soul, but it's divided up among many people. Maybe that's why hordes of people usually are very stupid, mobs of people. You know what I mean? Together, it's like they gang up and they, you know, decide
they
some
do.
Stupid shit.
And instead of coming back as a colony of ants in this example, they come back as a large family where the family is a soul. And so they all fight for the family. They go into battle for each other like a bunch of thugs.
Well, it's an interesting suggestion for sure. Have someone actually measured the voltage that you're talking about? Is this something that is measurable with our science that we have today?
It's difficult because we only discovered DC voltages about 150 years ago. And AC voltages were only first used in New York in about, I think it was 1943, after the work of Nikola Tesla. And so we've got DC voltage, that was one type, then 100 years later, AC voltage, and now in 2011, with future science, we've got helically polarized electromagnetic energy, or corkscrew voltages, which is what I've just discovered. And it looks like the soul is like a ball of lightning. Ball lightning is like a spherical ball of electromagnetic energy. So what we see, what I'm suggesting is we've discovered three types of electromagnetic energy during the scientific age of the last 200 years. It seems to be like every 100 years, we can identify another one as our thinking and our instruments become more sophisticated. What I'm saying is there could equally be another type, a fourth type, which represents a soul, a bubble of godly energy that God sends down while the fetus is in the womb, and the energy attacks to the fetus and becomes a human being for the lifetime of the monkey playing the drum, if you like. That's the energy that allows a human being to walk and talk and move. And then after 70 years, the energy releases, the bubble of energy releases again. If it's been good and this voltage has gone up, it'll go back to God. And if it's not, it stays on the earth for another chance of purification. So earth is purgatory. Earth is the area we call purgatory. And if we're really bad, we'll go to the sun. That's hellfire. So purgatory is like the reception area of hell. The real hellfire is the sun itself. And we can go to the sun, it would seem, for 3,740 years until the sun reverses its magnetic field. So then, this is why there's no such thing as time in the spirit world, because time only exists in the physical world. In the spirit world, nothing ever happens. Nothing ever happens before anything else or after anything else, because all you've got is light, electromagnetic energy. So it's just time. It's very clever. You know, time is fascinating. It's no good putting an egg in the oven and putting some flour in the oven and putting some butter in the oven for an hour, taking them out and mixing them together. You've got to mix up the egg with the butter and the flour and then put it in the oven. There's a way of doing things when you've got time. Time is very strict in how we operate within it. And as I say, if we're happy, time slows down. It's all contrived. You can see it. Surely anybody with any sense of perception can look around them and say, look, this was all designed. There's got to be a reason for it. Why time speeds up when we're happy? Why it slows down when we're miserable? It can't just be an accident.
That's all perception, though, right? Is it not?
Well, I perceive it. I sit down and I look around me and I can see the problems. I can see that normal people are the problem. Normal people made the world the way it is. And so,
no conspiracy?
You know, we've got to get away from normal people and start listening to exceptional people, not the people with the money who don't understand what God is, don't understand what incarnation is, don't understand what reincarnation is. These people are morons.
Well, it feels, Maurice, if we look at history, a lot of people with new ideas and exceptional suggestions have been, you know, persecuted the most and hated, you know, for most parts throughout history. And the question is why, if it has to do with, you know, ending the way things are on the, if this is something that leads to a development or a progress, let's say, it's something that would change the, you know, basically the status of what's going on the planet. And maybe most people don't want that.
But if people understood how reincarnation works, if the rich people understood they're going to come back poor, in absolute poverty, in a third world country, covered in flies, if they understood that, then perhaps they'd help those around them and increase their soul voltage instead. In fact, some people
do. But it's what you do with the money versus what if you have it, correct? I mean, that's an instrument of maybe bettering something or worsening something, right? So.
Well, yes, but I mean, all of it, everything is explained to us in the Bible. Jesus says it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And he's clearly saying, if you've got money, you can't go to heaven. You'll come, because everybody comes back as the opposite. Men come back as women. Women come back as men. Fat people come back as thin people. Thin people come back as fat people. Rich people come back as poor people. Poor people come back as rich people. Black people come back as white people. White people come back. This is the mechanism of incarnation. Mm-hmm. And this is what the ancient civilizations teach us in their encoded information they leave behind. So you look at people like Warren Buffett, for example, the financier in America, the businessman in America. He's a Freemason. He has to be a Freemason. The door on his office is 1440, 1440. And it says in the Bible, those with 144,000 on their forehead will go to heaven.
Is that why
Warren Buffett done? He's given all his money away to Bill Gates.
He's trying to get out of it. See, that's
he's trying to get out of it. He knows what we know because he's a Freemason. Freemasons know all of this stuff, but the bad ones have chosen to reincarnate because they know they'll come back to the same DNA. as long as they haven't been altogether bad, we'll come back to the DNA. So they know that they don't have to worry if they don't get to heaven this time around, because they'll come back to a rich family and have the best of everything.
Let me ask you this. You talked about corkscrew-style magnetic waves before, and we've been talking about a gravity wave generator. Is any of this related to the torsion field in any way, of what that implies? I don't know everything about, you know, behind that, of course, but have you, can we connect those two areas, do you think?
Well, I don't know. I'd like to see what a definition of a torsion field is. And the problem is, with all this physics, relativity and quantum theory is nonsense. It's absolute garbage. And they make it up as they go along. I mean, it's ludicrous. So, you know, if you can't accept any of that, are we to accept anything else they try to tell us? And my answer would be no, because when the blind lead the blind, both fall up in the same dark hole.
All right. Yeah, I think they, a torsion field, a theory of energy in which quantum spin of particles can be used to cause emanations lacking mass and energy to carry information through a vacuum at 1 billion times the speed of light. The theory conceived in the Soviet Union by a group of physicists in the 1980s is loosely based on Einstein-Cartan theory and some variant solutions of Maxwell equation. That's, I guess, one definition of torsion field.
Yeah, just gobbledygook, Henry. Just gobbledygook.
Alrighty, very good. Is there any other area, a big area, in terms of what we've been talking about here today, Maurice, that we've kind of left out here before we begin to wrap things up for this time, that you feel is pertinent to talk about?
Well, not really. I think if I have anything to say to people, it's, you've got to do, you know, I'm not a religious person, I'm a spiritual person. But it seems to me, if you want to escape planet prison, you've got to love your neighbor. And I know a lot of people say to me, it's all right for you saying that, Maurice, but you haven't seen my neighbor. You know, and I say, well, look, you know, there are certain things you've got to do. Avoid normal people. That's one of them. You know, love your neighbor. You've got to love them. And if the only way to love them is to avoid them, then avoid them.
Well,
you've got to
easy.
Use a bit of common sense about this.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. I think that's kind of funny, though, actually. But this has been really interesting, Maurice. I think there are some interesting ideas that we've laid out. And let us know if you do have any plans. I wasn't necessarily talking about a book earlier, but I was thinking in terms of writing a paper maybe, or something like that, on this, on what you've been talking about. If there is more interest from people who wants to read more about it and try to figure it out more, if it makes sense, that's what I was thinking about. Any plans on doing that on this 9/11 topic?
Not on 9/11, because once it's like the prototype situation we discussed earlier. I'm not really a prototype person. I'm not one for developing the ideas beyond conception. In other words, I conceive the idea, I conceive the answer to the problem, then I lose interest in it. I'm not interested anymore. What interests me is the actual challenge of the question in the first place. For example, when modern science can't make water, or, you know, can't understand why the salt came from in the sea, I start thinking about these. And it seems to me that these salt mines that we have all over the world, underground, where we get the grit for the roads in winter, that the scientists tell us that these are the remnants of an ancient sea. Well, I don't believe that at all. I believe They are seas that never made it into a sea. They never became an ocean, and which teaches us how the oceans were made in the first place and where the salt may have come from. And that will teach us how to make water. We cannot make water, which is ludicrous. Well, the fresh water we have comes from the evaporation cycle of the sea. Well, you know, 99% of the water is salt water, and we can't make water. Why can't we? We're supposed to be intelligent people. We all drink 8 pints of water a day, yet we can't make it.
Yeah,
it's ludicrous again. It's bizarre. Why aren't people addressing these questions and answering them, where water comes from, how water can be made? And, of course, once we understand how gravity works, we can understand how water can be made. And it's like if we fire 2 deuterium atoms together, the magnetic moments are each 1 in 8, as we discussed earlier. one deuterium atom can have a possibility of 8 magnetic orientations, 1 in 8. The other deuterium atom can have a magnetic orientation of 1 in 8. So if we smash them together, only 1 in every 64 can possibly become a helium atom. But what happens is, when people have tried doing this, they say, it's not working, we're not getting any helium. But you are, it's just that it takes a long time, because only 1.5% of the collisions are productive. And the same goes with water. Once we start to work out the probability of the electron positions for oxygen and hydrogen, the hydrogen molecule, which is 2 hydrogen atoms, and one oxygen atom, then we can start to work out the probability of getting water when we start putting them together in the correctly orientated magnetic fields. So all of these questions have simple solutions. But of course, the people with the ideas, as you said before, are vilified by the incumbent generation of scientists, which get paid for doing nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good system for keeping everything in status quo. That is for sure. Some have been after the fact that they've come and gone, though, have gotten a little bit recognition here and there, but not generally. Some names are forgotten and lost in history, for sure. That seems to be the case.
Well, you know, when I was talking about this reason-inspired discovery as against the reverse engineering discovery, there's been so many of the discoveries are accidental. But as I said earlier, mankind is very primitive and it can't begin at the beginning and then progress. And I think this is the biggest thing to undermine civilization at this time, mm-hmm. is the inability to logically build upon possibilities. And that will be the undoing of mankind. And there are some people think that we should allow everybody to have as many children as they want. Other people think that the world is finite and therefore we should have a given number of children, like the Chinese, 1 or 2 perhaps. And the reason we have so much divergence in thinking is because of astrology. And we must understand that astrology has been put here to confound us, to pit man against man, language against language, foe against foe, because that's what's happening. And we need to teach philosophy in schools. We need to teach astrology in schools. We need to teach spirituality in schools.
I agree.
And until that happens, we're never going to make any progress.
No, there's a lot of things lacking in school. We've talked about that before, and many others are very well at pointing out that, like tragedy and hope and stuff like that, too. In terms of how ridiculously the school system is, and for good reason, because it's again, as we've pointed out before, Maurice, it's about keeping that status quo in place and actually preventing progress in all regards. But I think that's a good point, Maurice, to wrap things up for this time. We want to thank you for your time and for sharing your ideas and suggestions with us. There's much more of this, of course, in your book Future Science. Not everything that we've been talking about, but a lot of the more fundamental ideas behind this. This is your latest book. So give us your website again, Maurice, for people who want to check out the book and get a copy for themselves.
Okay, it's www.mauricecotterill.com. And the first 2 editions are sold out, and the 3rd edition is now available through my website.
Very good, mauricecotterill.com. Thanks, Maurice.
Thank you, Henrik.
That's it for today. You might have some new suggestions to consider after this program. We listen. And hopefully we learn. More coming up with Penny Pierce, Walter Block, Allison Adams, Alan Abadesa, and many more. Thank you for listening and for being a member. We'll talk to you in just a few. Have a good one.